Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves, you're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing, or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit ncl.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line ships registry the Bahamas and USA.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
The farmhouse had never been described as haunted, at least not out loud. It sat on familiar land, surrounded by the same fields it had always known. Weathered but functional. The kind of place where strange things didn't stand out because nothing about it ever really changed. The family had lived there for nearly 30 years, long enough that the house no longer felt temporary or owned. It felt inherited in a way that went beyond paperwork. Stories about odd moments were common, especially among the women, but they were told casually, folded into conversation without ceremony. A sound that couldn't be placed, a feeling that lingered too long, a moment of knowing something before there was a reason to know it. No one made a spectacle of these things. They were treated like quirks, passed down alongside recipes and habits. It was sometimes referred to as a rite of passage, though no one ever explained what that meant. At some point, a girl in the family would have her experience, and the others would nod knowingly. It wasn't framed as a gift or a curse, just something that happened. Most of the time, it seemed to pass quietly enough. She didn't think much about any of that until the weeks leading up to her 13th birthday, when sleep became difficult in a way that didn't feel normal. It didn't begin with a sound or a sight. It began with awareness. The sensation that someone was in the room with her at night, standing just outside her field of view. It wasn't dramatic or sudden. It felt settled, as if whatever was there had already been present for some time and she was only now noticing it. The feeling was strongest in the upstairs bedroom. She had slept there before without issue, but something about that room changed. When she lay facing the open space, her chest tightened and her thoughts raced, an unease building that refused to settle. Without consciously deciding to, she began sleeping on her left side, facing the wall. That position allowed her to relax just enough to fall asleep. It disturbed her that her body seemed to know something her mind did not. The adjustment didn't feel like a preference. It felt like compliance. She tried to reason through it. Old houses made noise. Stress affected sleep. Adolescence altered perception. None of those explanations quite fit, but they were easier than accepting that the room itself felt occupied. When she mentioned it to her grandmother, she did so casually, almost dismissively, as if she expected reassurance. Her grandmother didn't seem surprised. "That room can get like that," she said, and moved on. The conversation ended there. No follow-up questions, no concern. That reaction unsettled her more than disbelief would have. It suggested that the experience wasn't unusual, only unspoken. About a week later, something happened that shifted the experience from internal to undeniable. Her younger cousin was staying the night, sleeping beside her in the upstairs bed. The house was quiet, the kind of quiet that comes from distance rather than stillness. She lay awake, facing the wall, aware of the familiar pressure behind her. Without warning, a bright white light moved across the wall. It wasn't a reflection or a gradual glow. It was a distinct, spherical light, moving quickly and deliberately from one side of the wall to the other before vanishing. The speed of it startled her enough that her breath caught. Before she could react, her cousin sat up. "What was that?" the child asked. The moment froze. She hadn't said anything. She hadn't gasped or moved. The light hadn't been imagined in private. Someone else had seen it. The next morning, the adults listened politely, nodded, and carried on with the day. No one accused them of making it up. No one pushed for details. The incident was quietly absorbed into the long, unspoken history of the house. For her, it marked a turning point. After that night, the presence became more defined. She began thinking of it as male, not because she saw a man, but because the awareness carried a specific quality. It felt firm, observant, impersonal, like someone standing in the dark with a task, not an emotion. It didn't feel threatening so much as deliberate. She adapted to it, the way people adapt to constant background noise. She avoided facing the room. She kept her thoughts occupied until sleep overtook fear. She learned that if she didn't acknowledge the presence directly, it stayed at a distance. Then, about a month after the sensations began, she heard a voice. At first, it sounded like a man muttering somewhere nearby, indistinct enough that she could almost dismiss it as the house settling or a half-formed thought. She told herself it was nothing and decided not to react. "You heard me," the voice said. The words weren't loud or aggressive. They were calm, corrective. The fear came not from the sound itself, but from the timing. The voice responded to her internal decision to ignore it, as if it had been aware of her thoughts. Her body locked in place. She didn't scream or sit up. She lay still, staring at the wall, waiting for the room to return to normal. After that, the voice didn't speak in full sentences again. It returned in fragments, murmurs just clear enough to register as language. The effect was subtle but persistent, keeping her on edge without escalating. One night, exhausted and frustrated, she tried something she had heard older relatives mention in passing. She lay in bed and quietly repeated the words, "Leave me alone," steady and calm, while imagining light expanding outward from her body, filling the room. She didn't know if she believed in what she was doing. She only knew she needed to act. The muttering stopped. The pressure in the room eased. That night, the presence withdrew completely. The relief was immediate, but it was followed by something heavier. The silence didn't feel like a coincidence. It felt like a response. Whatever had been there had listened. The presence returned later, quieter and more distant, as if it had adjusted its behavior. And that realization shifted the question she was asking herself, and it was no longer about whether the house was haunted. It was about whether she was participating in something ongoing. Because if this was her family's rite of passage, it didn't feel like a single event. It felt like the beginning of a pattern. And she had a growing sense that 13 wasn't the end of it. It was the point where it started paying attention. The change didn't announce itself all at once. It arrived gradually, the way tension does when you live with it long enough that it begins to feel structural rather than temporary. The house stayed the same on the surface, the routines held, but her awareness widened, and with it came the sense that the experience she'd stumbled into was not singular. It wasn't confined to one room or one presence. It was layered. The male presence remained mostly where it had always been, strongest in the upstairs bedroom. It returned after that night of silence, but altered. The pressure was lighter, the awareness more distant, as if whatever had been watching her had recalibrated. It no longer pressed in so closely, and it never spoke again. That silence felt intentional rather than absent. It gave the impression of something that had learned how much space it was allowed to occupy. She stopped sleeping upstairs soon after. Not out of panic, but practicality. The couch downstairs offered visibility, openness, and the illusion of control. If something was there, she reasoned, she would see it. She would not be pinned against a wall with her back to the dark. That logic failed almost immediately. The second presence made itself known in the living room, and the difference was unmistakable. Where the watcher felt distant and observational, this one felt personal. It carried hostility, not as an outburst, but as a constant undercurrent. The sense she had was not that she was being watched, but that she was intruding. The feeling arrived suddenly one night while she lay on the couch, staring at the ceiling. The room felt tighter, as if the air itself had shifted. She became acutely aware of the space beside her, the exact area where someone would stand if they wanted to be close enough to intimidate without touching. When she closed her eyes, even briefly, the image came. It wasn't detailed, and it didn't linger. It arrived whole and vanished just as quickly. A girl, close to her own age, standing beside the couch, an arm raised overhead, the unmistakable suggestion of a blade held aloft. The image never progressed beyond that moment. There was no movement, no follow-through. The threat existed in suspension, as if its purpose was not to act but to be understood. She opened her eyes immediately. The room was unchanged. The furniture sat where it always had. No shadow stood beside her. And yet the hostility remained pressing in on her awareness like a held breath. After that, she stopped trying to sleep when that presence arrived. She stayed awake, eyes open, waiting for the sky outside the windows to lighten. Fear like that didn't lend itself to screaming or panic. It settled into the body and stayed there, turning hours into endurance tests. The exhaustion followed her into the day, dulling her focus and thinning her patience. No one connected her fatigue to the house. Teenagers were tired. Teenagers were moody. The explanations were simple and reassuring, and she clung to them whenever she could. But the activity didn't limit itself to nights or rooms. There was a narrow space outside the house that she began avoiding instinctively, the area between the right side of the garage and the gate next to it. During the day, it was unremarkable. At night, walking past it triggered an immediate physical response. Her stomach dropped, her chest tightened, and the urge to move quickly and without thinking overrode everything else. Sometimes she ran. She didn't scream or look back. She bolted toward the porch light, toward the barn, toward any place where the darkness broke cleanly. Once she reached the light, she would stop and turn around, forcing herself to confront the space she had fled. There was never anything there. And yet the darkness between the garage and the gate always seemed different from the rest of the yard. Not deeper, not more opaque, simply resistant, as though her eyes couldn't quite settle on it. That presence didn't feel human. It didn't carry age or gender or emotion in any recognizable way. It felt like intent without form, something that existed to provoke reaction rather than observation, and it seemed to enjoy doing so. The first time something struck her near that area, she assumed it was a falling branch. The sting against her scalp was sharp enough to make her gasp, but when she searched the ground, there was nothing to explain it. The air was still, the trees unmoving. It happened again weeks later, a sudden impact against her shoulder, another time her leg. Each incident was brief and left no evidence behind. Whatever made contact seemed to vanish as soon as it had made its point. The night the bow appeared was the first time someone else was present to witness the aftermath. She and her grandmother were returning from starting a load of laundry well after midnight. The yard was quiet, the porch light casting a pale circle over the gravel. As they walked, she felt something strike her lower leg. It wasn't painful, but it was deliberate enough that both of them stopped. At her feet lay a small pink bow. The color was faded, the fabric softened with age, the kind of object that looked out of place anywhere outside a memory or an old photograph. Her grandmother stared at it for several seconds before picking it up. "That wasn't here before," she said, her voice calm but certain. There was no wind, no tree overhead, no reasonable explanation for how it had arrived or why it had made contact. Her grandmother didn't react with alarm. She looked irritated, as though this was a familiar nuisance rather than a shocking event. "Don't encourage it," she said after a moment, "but don't pretend it didn't happen." That advice lingered. It suggested intention, rules, interaction. It didn't fit the idea of random fear or imagination. It implied behavior. Not long after, she began noticing something else that unsettled her in a different way. Certain places made her physically ill. Her aunt's neighborhood was one, the lake house was another. The reaction was immediate and overwhelming, nausea, dizziness, a tightening in her chest that made breathing feel strained. It didn't matter how calm or distracted she was beforehand. The sensation arrived the moment she entered those areas. At first, she dismissed it as anxiety. Later, she learned that someone had taken their own life near her aunt's home, information she hadn't known when the reaction first occurred. The timing disturbed her. It meant her body had responded before her mind had been given a reason. The sensation didn't feel like fear. It felt like recognition. One night, during a stretch when she was sick and sleeping poorly, another voice entered the pattern. This one didn't resemble the watcher or the hostile girl. It sounded like an older woman, polite and clear, as though someone had stepped into the room and didn't want to startle her. "Excuse me," the voice said. It was ordinary in a way the others were not. There was no threat in it, no command, just a quiet attempt to be acknowledged. She didn't answer. She waited, listening. Nothing followed. The voice never returned. That single moment complicated everything. It suggested the house wasn't limited to one or two presences, and that whatever existed there moved independently of her fear or attention. The experiences no longer felt random, they felt patterned. The watcher observed and the girl guarded. The presence near the garage provoked, and occasionally, something else passed through entirely. The question she found herself asking shifted again. It was no longer whether the house was haunted. It was whether the house was simply the place where something latent had found room to surface. She had grown up hearing stories from other women in her family, but none of them described escalation. None of them spoke about being followed beyond the property or learning rules through trial and fear. That raised a possibility she didn't want to consider. Perhaps the house hadn't changed at all. Perhaps she had. And if that was true, then the farmhouse wasn't the source of the activity. It was only the beginning. By the time autumn arrived, the question was no longer whether something was happening. That had settled into fact, the way pain settles into muscle memory. The question had become whether any of it could be stopped or whether it was simply something she would learn to carry. The house did not escalate in the way she once feared it might. There were no dramatic confrontations, no nights that ended in screaming or running for help. Instead, the activity seemed to level out, arranging itself into a pattern that repeated often enough to become familiar. Familiar did not mean safe, but it did mean predictable, and predictability offered a strange kind of relief. The male presence remained tied to the upstairs bedroom. It did not follow her beyond that space, and over time it grew easier to think of it less as an intruder and more as a fixed condition of the room itself. If she avoided the bed, if she did not linger upstairs at night, it kept its distance. She wondered if it had always been there and simply hadn't noticed until she reached an age where her awareness sharpened. The girl was harder to accommodate. That presence did not seem bound to a single room, and its hostility felt personal in a way the others did not. Yet even that presence obeyed limits. It never acted beyond the threat it projected. It never moved closer than her immediate awareness. As long as she stayed awake, as long as she did not close her eyes and surrender control, it remained at the edge. That too felt negotiated. The space near the garage continued to provoke the strongest physical reaction. She avoided it whenever possible, choosing longer routes across the property rather than testing whether the sensation would fade. It did not. The few times she passed through that area out of necessity, the same instinctive panic rose in her chest, urging her to move faster, to seek light. Nothing ever appeared, and yet the feeling never diminished. She began to suspect that whatever existed there fed on reaction. Not fear exactly, but acknowledgement, motion, attention. When she hurried past without running, when she refused to let the sensation dictate her behavior entirely, it seemed to lose interest more quickly. The lesson was subtle, learned through repetition rather than instruction. As for the objects, the strikes, the bow, those incidents became rarer. They did not stop entirely, but they lost their urgency. It occurred to her that they may never have been intended as harm at all. They felt more like tests or warnings or attempts to provoke recognition. Once recognition was given, they no longer needed to repeat themselves as often. What unsettled her most was not what happened in the house, but what happened elsewhere. The physical reactions followed her. The nausea at certain locations did not disappear with time. If anything, it sharpened. She began to trust it, even when she did not understand it. If a place made her feel unwell for no clear reason, she left. She did not ask questions. She did not push through. Later, she would learn details that explained some of those reactions, deaths, accidents, quiet tragedies that had occurred long before she knew to look for them. The knowledge always came after the fact. That pattern frightened her more than any voice or presence. It meant the farmhouse was not the cause. It was simply the environment where her sensitivity had first become unavoidable. The realization forced a reframing of everything she had been taught. The family's so-called rite of passage no longer felt like a single experience that came and went. It felt more like an awakening, something that revealed a capacity rather than a condition. The older women had never spoken about it at length, not because it had ended for them, but because it had become ordinary. They had learned how to live around it. That understanding arrived slowly, not as comfort, but as resignation. She stopped waiting for the activity to peak or collapse. She stopped looking for a moment when everything would resolve itself neatly. Instead, she began paying attention to what made things worse and what made them manageable. Fatigue made it worse, anxiety sharpened it, fixation invited it closer, routine dulled it. Grounding herself in ordinary tasks helped, so did refusing to frame every sensation as a threat. Not everything that appeared to her awareness carried intent. Not everything that felt present meant harm. The night the black animal appeared, fox-like at first, then shifting into something larger and more sorrowful, stood apart from the rest of her experiences because it did not inspire fear. It arrived without hostility and left without explanation, disappearing as suddenly as it had come when the family's kitten fell ill and died. She never saw it again. She thought about that often, and if some presences came and went with circumstance, then not everything was attached to her personally. Some things passed through because they were drawn to moments rather than people. That distinction mattered. It meant she was not a magnet for everything unseen, only perceptive enough to notice what others overlooked. As she grew older, the experiences did not vanish, but they changed. The edges softened, the fear dulled, the awareness remained. She learned that ignoring something entirely could be just as risky as obsessing over it. She learned that acknowledgement did not have to mean invitation. And she learned that boundaries were not about force, but consistency. Most importantly, she learned that no one else could tell her what this meant. Not her family, not books, not stories from other people who claimed similar experiences. Whatever she carried was personal, shaped by her own responses as much as by whatever existed beyond her understanding. The farmhouse still stood unchanged long after she began spending more time away from it. When she returned, the house greeted her the same way it always had, without ceremony or escalation. The rooms felt familiar. The air felt heavy in places and neutral in others. Nothing rushed her. Nothing announced itself. It occurred to her then that the house had never been testing her endurance. It had been teaching her discernment. She no longer wondered whether the activity would ever stop. That question no longer mattered. What mattered was that she had learned how to move through it without losing herself. How to recognize us when something required attention and when it could be left alone. The fear that once consumed her nights had been replaced by something quieter, more durable, an understanding that whatever this was, sensitivity, inheritance, awareness. It was not a countdown to catastrophe. It was simply a fact of her life, and like any fact, it could be acknowledged without being allowed to define her. The farmhouse had not given her answers. It had given her practice, and in the end, that was the difference between being haunted and being aware.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.